What's good, everybody? Pete, Rob, Nick Alberga around the horn talking fantasy pucks and previewing the Stanley Cup playoffs. Seems like we've been doing this for months, guys, but we're getting a little closer. We're a couple of days away from July, boys.
Happy Monday, everybody, and pretty crazy draft lottery results last Friday. How about it?
Yeah, crazy's probably the word. It's great to be with you guys. What's going on?
Yeah, we thought we'd have a little more clarity this morning on where Lafreniere might be going. Of course, now there are a bunch of teams in the mix. Pretty much whoever loses the first round, that qualifying round, will be eligible with the 12.5% for each of those eight teams.
Yeah, it's to me, guys, it's all about hockey karma, right? And that's why I do feel like karma played a factor in the Los Angeles Kings moving up to the second overall pick, right? We do forget that team had won seven straight games before the pandemic hit, right? And you look at the numbers and the history of teams that have been really, really bad and not gotten that first overall pick, and it continued this year with Detroit. And good on LA to get a really, really strong pick at number two. I think people are making too much of this whole scenario, just more so because there isn't, a team right now. But, I mean, this has happened a lot where teams have jumped up, right? You look at the last couple of years. So the fact that I've had a couple of days to break it all down and analyze a bit further, I'm not going as crazy as I was on Friday. I'll say that.
I felt terrible for the Ottawa Senators, the fact that they can't even get a top two pick. And then to watch Steve Yzerman, you know, they have the worst record in the league. They can't get the number one pick. And then from all accounts, the LA Kings are as deep as any team in the league as far as a prospect perspective. And now they get the, you know, number two pick. The Kings are going to be good for a while with their prospects. That's what everyone's saying, you know, and Luke Robitaille knows what he's doing. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, you talk about a potential quick turnaround. They have maybe a Byfield or, you know, maybe the German kid. We'll see. But they also have Turcotte, and they still have their championship core of Doughty, Kopitar. I mean, that's just – and Jonathan Quick, of course. So, yeah, that team has a chance. Depending on how things twist and turn here during the lottery, they have a chance to get better real quickly.
Yeah, and first and foremost, a fantasy point of view, I just want to see LA be more of an offensive team and adapt to the times. And I think this will be an uptick. Whoever they take, if it's Stützle or Byfield, with that number two pick, most likely either one of those two guys. I know they said there's four guys they're looking at. But just I want to see this team with a bit of a boost offensively. They've, you know, it seems for the last decade, dating back to their cups, they've played more of a defensive brand. I'd like them to open it up, utilize that speed and skill, and adapt to this era of NHL hockey. And I think that things for, you know, Drew Doughty on the back end, it's good things for Anze Kopitar and Dustin Brown up front. You need veterans in your lineup. You can't just go with all young players. You're never going to be successful in going all the way, in my opinion, at least. So I think this is really good value for Los Angeles' top six. And again, hockey karma hit this team hard, and positive karma at that. They win seven in a row, end up with the second overall pick.
And those guys each have at least three, four more productive seasons left in them. So that's at least another championship window for LA. But guys, let's turn it ahead here. Let's look at some fantasy X factors for the Stanley Cup playoffs or the qualifying round, whatever you want to call it. For me, the first guy on the list has got to be Jake Guentzel, one of the best postseason performers of the past three seasons now. Guy steps up every single year. Now, injury concerns are definitely a factor. So where do you kind of see Guentzel contributing this year with the big-time injury setback?
I think the reality of this, I know that you were just kind of doing a conspiracy theory a little bit around the Penguins, but I do believe that they're almost a lock to win that first round against Montreal. That means you're getting, you know, at least probably around 12 games of Jake Guentzel where he could score you eight goals in that span. I mean, as long as he's even close to healthy playing, he has that, like, special chemistry with Sidney Crosby that so many guys, you know, all those moving pieces through the years couldn't really find. Sometimes guys would find it here and there. He has it locked in whenever he's in the lineup. He's a lock with Crosby, and now he's a lock on power play one as well. So, like, he is as close to a guarantee of an elite goal scorer come postseason time. And yeah, I think he's like top 25 overall players for fantasy pools. Lock it in.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's the forgotten guy in Pittsburgh because of how much time he missed. And he was absolutely ripping it up before he went down. We do forget that. And I just think in general in Pittsburgh, conspiracy theories aside, you know, I'm trying to quantify and figure out who I think could go all the way. And the more and more I look at it, I like Pittsburgh. I really, really do. Especially, you know, the underrated pickup of Jason Zucker was big for me. You know, I know he played a lot with Crosby. I think what's likely to happen is Zucker slides to the second line with Malkin and Rust, and we probably see Crosby and Gensel get back together. You guys talked about it. You know, the history, the chemistry those two have built in the last couple of years is pretty uncanny. And then the fact you have a Jared McCann and a Patrick Hornqvist you can utilize in your top six, utilize in your PP1, they're a scary team. And I think anytime a guy like Chris Letang, who is normally really banged up, gets the time off, I think that's good news. Brian Dumoulin's another guy who's been dinged up for points in time. We do forget how outstanding this season truly was for Pittsburgh guys, and that's why I'm still fully behind Mike Sullivan for the Jack Adams, just more so how impressive this team was, even without, you know, so many key players in their roles, I think was massive. And, you know, chemistry is going to be a big thing. You can make that case for every team you think is a legitimate threat to win the cup, but on paper, Pittsburgh is really, really scary. And then you sort of add Jake Gensel in the mix, who's been missing all year, and it'll be hard-pressed. Somebody will be hard-pressed to beat that team.
I think it's, too, like you take it out a little bit from fantasy lens, and you look at – you mentioned Brian Dumoulin's great on the back, and John Marino now stepping up big time this year. Chris Letang, if he's fully healthy come the postseason. I mean, that is a real solid group of guys already there on the back end. And then you got a spark plug in Jake Gensel up front, putting up at least a point per game. I mean, that is going to be real, real hard. I know I did bring up the conspiracy theory earlier for the Canadiens, but that's going to be really, really hard to contend with. I don't care whether it's the Canadiens in the first round here or if it's deeper in the postseason. I mean, that's going to be a very dynamite team, as they've shown for the past decade plus now.
And I know the Penguins had that early exit last year, kind of an outlier in their grand scheme of things historically in the postseason for a team that's won the Cup three times since the mid-2000s. But yeah, I think Gensel has emerged and come along pretty far considering where he was a couple of years ago, where he was like strictly a playoff performer and then he was not ever carrying it over to a full regular season. I mean, this guy has shown, didn't he have like 40 goals that one year when he wasn't on power play one in the regular season? And now, of course, he's taken it a step further. And if you look at it again for the postseason, tied for first among active players in goals per game in the postseason, Jake Gensel with Mark Scheifele. So you got to love that.
So I think the second biggest name on this list has got to be Dougie Hamilton. Now, we haven't really gone in depth with you, Nick, on the Hurricanes. Obviously a loaded back and probably headlined by Hamilton. What do you make of him? He's definitely a similar situation to Gensel where you're coming off a big-time injury, but it's also a big-time point producer at a scarce position in fantasy and in defense.
Yeah, I call this the Brady Shea revenge series against the New York Rangers. Should be a lot of fun to watch for a variety of reasons on the other side. But I think people are so quick to discount Carolina. And truthfully, I think they love that role, right? You look at last springtime, how effective they were in going pretty decently far in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And this time around, they're pitted against the young gun New York Rangers, who have, you know, all the up and emerging talent in the NHL. And people seem to be forgetting that Carolina's a really damn good hockey club. And then you add Dougie Hamilton, who was one of the elite point-producing defensemen before he went down. Automatically, that adds a boost to PP1. You know, Sebastian Aho, Teuvo Teravainen had a really, really solid year. It probably slots Jake Slavin back to PP2, which is fine. Andrei Svechnikov took an unbelievable step in his progression this year from an offensive standpoint. So I wouldn't sleep on Carolina, and that's why I still feel Carolina's going to win this series. I know people like to think about recency, like to think about Artemi Panarin, how dynamic a season he had. Mika Zibanejad was remarkable. Igor Shesterkin in between the pipes. But let's not forget the fortitude of this Carolina Hurricanes team. Let's not forget who coaches this team. You know, let's not forget the last couple years where they've just continued to progress and progress. And I also like the moves they made at the trade deadline, you know, last minute bringing in Brady Shea. And then all of a sudden, they never could have predicted this, guys. But the time off has given them even more depth on the back end, right? Because you have a Brady Shea now back there. You know, it runs you the ability to have, you know, a Jake Gardner and a Trevor Van Riemsdyk in your 5-6 pairing. And it allows you to have Dougie Hamilton back in your lineup. So I think you're right in bringing up that name. He's a massive X factor. And this is an again, it all gets to the conversation. How quickly can you get back to the pace you were playing at before, right?
I think the big X factor here is like collectively getting Hamilton back and Sammy Vatanen back. Because even if Vatanen's not on the power play, he's going to be a really big difference maker if he can play and make an impact. I think this series is just so confounding because you see, like, you look at one advantage, like the Hurricanes are getting those guys back, and then you're like, oh, well, the Rangers have two of the 15 best players in the league. And then you look at, oh, the Hurricanes did it last year. They have that proven track record, whereas the Rangers are like, oh, they're one of the best road teams in the league. They beat the Hurricanes four times. So it's like you could go back and forth. The only thing I'm drawing a conclusion for is like this series is going five games, and I can't wait to watch that game five on a neutral site and just see which team can eke out the win to move
on. I have the same kind of thoughts you do, Nick, here with the more time that goes on, the more I like Carolina. I think when people look at the Rangers and they don't even think that they have a goalie concern, I disagree with that wholeheartedly. It's nothing against Shesterkin. Kid's a rookie. I mean, postseason games are another level of intensity. They're another level of factor. And when you look at postseason goals, look at a compilation from last year's playoff. There are some scrappy goals on that YouTube video. So you got to play a completely different style. You got to be a little bit more dynamic in net, and you got to take the ground away from those heavy forwards in front of you. Carolina's got a lot of them. They got heavy shots coming from the point. That is going to be a real hard out. I don't care whether it's Mrazek or Reimer in net. That is a team that you do not want to match up against, even if you are the high-flying New York Rangers.
You're right, Rob. And you look at Shesterkin individually. Let's not forget, I don't care who you are. You can be George Vezina. You're going to have your barriers, your stumbling blocks early on in your NHL career. So who's to say, you know, his great first 12 games in the NHL were phenomenal. But again, different animal in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I think you look at some of the up-and-comers the last couple of years, they've had their ups and their downs. Carter Hart, Matt Murray, John Gibson, Connor Hellebuyck, the list goes on and on. So just because he ended on a high note to Shesterkin, it's just so different when you get to those games and you know all that rests between you and a long, long offseason ahead is three losses, and it gets in your head. And that's what it's all about, you know, in terms of being a goaltender in general, especially in the National Hockey League. And it certainly helps when you have the tutelage of a Henrik Lundqvist around you full time. But I'm with you. I'm not that sold just yet that Shesterkin's going to be the guy right away to lead this team.
And one more quick thing I just want to throw out about on that point, Varlamov, go back to his rookie year when he was a postseason standout for the Caps. He played lights out. They still lost the series, okay? Yeah. That's a similar team offensively as well. Go back to Holtby, same thing. His rookie year, big game potential. Sure, they won a round, but it wasn't the postseason success that you expect right away from those high-level guys.
One other player I wanted to bring up on the Hurricanes that I think if you look away from those recency trends and you look at a player that's going to need to stack up offensively, and he has at many points in his career, Sebastian Aho for the Hurricanes. I mean, I think, you know, last year, 12 points in 15 playoff games was solid. I think his defensive play was even more important. But if you're stacking up again, if he's matching up against Zibanejad, and then the other line is maybe a little undermanned against Panarin, he's going to have to put up maybe way better than a point per game for them to win the series. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think, you know, another key too would be Vinny Trocheck, right? There's a reason why they brought this guy in for the matchup game in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And no doubt, like, a lot of focus will be on that Carolina top line from a Rangers perspective. Let's not forget, the Rangers have had their issues defensively this season. That's going to continue. It doesn't just change because we haven't seen hockey in 4 months. So Carolina will do their best to get in their heads. And, you know, Svechnikov, Aho, and Teravainen were one of the most dynamic lines that nobody talked about this season, right? So I'm looking at that second line with Vinny Trocheck. It was an up-and-down year. Let's not forget, this guy missed a lot of time last year for the Florida Panthers, and it's tough to get back to where you were. So he's a guy I'm zoned in on. Marty Natchez is a rookie that nobody really talked about this year. I really, really like what he brings to the table. I saw him a couple times in person in Toronto, and I was really, really impressed. But I think we know it's all about depth scoring in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It never hurts to have a guy like Justin Williams on your roster, especially when teams are counting you out against the New York Rangers, who are the cream of the crop in terms of conversation in this league. So from an offensive standpoint, from a depth standpoint, I think Carolina has way more depth offensively than the New York Rangers truly do. And guys who have been there and done it before, right? I think we have to stress that going into playoff conversation too.
And funny enough, Aho had 38 goals this year. He had a down year in points only.
The former Canadian Sebastian Aho?
Right, right. The worst offer sheet, right. The only 38 goals in 68 games. That's a 40-goal score. Say what you want about shooting percentage. He's a smart player. He knows what he's doing. That could be a 20% shooter. It wouldn't surprise me year in, year out. So that's a 40-goal guy. Now, I don't care if his assist totals are a little bit down. If Aho's scoring, if Svechnikov's scoring, you've got two 40-goal guys on an offense. That's as good as the New York Rangers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that line that Nick mentioned, the big line on Carolina, that's a top 10 line trio in the entire league. Nobody can dispute that. Another guy that is going to be a huge difference maker for the Rangers, assuming he comes back, is Chris Kreider, and he's on your X Factors list as well, Robbie, on the other side of the spectrum for the Rangers. So Kreider was really turning into like a different animal in terms of his fantasy value and his offensive upside. Do you think his physicality, like, does that turn the tide? Is he enough to be an X factor here, Nick?
I do. Like, you know, the more and more I look at this series, I just like Carolina way more. I understand the sexiness and the appeal of the names we've mentioned on the Rangers, especially Panarin, who deserves conversation for the Hart Trophy. Won't get it, but Ryan Strome had a great year. But you look at some of the seasoned vets on Carolina and the efficiency that comes with that roster, and you know what you're going to get in night in and night out, as opposed to a New York Rangers team who hasn't been there before in the last couple of years. I think, you know, the profound favorite in that series, to me at least, is the Carolina Hurricanes. But the Rangers are going to need exceptional play up and down that lineup. You're going to need Brendan Lemieux to, you know, coax Carolina into taking penalties and setting up that dynamic power play with guys like Trouba and D'Angelo and Panarin and Zibanejad. But it's going to be tough. I know on paper people like to get excited about the Rangers, but I don't know if it's their time just yet. How do you feel, Rob?
The last note for me on this is that it's going to come down to the back end. It normally always does in the postseason. And when you look at Carolina's back end, it's not even in the same chapter as Carolina's. Yeah. Carolina's is just so – that's the final chapter of a defense. New York Rangers is on chapter one or two of the War and Peace long novel. Okay, so when you look, it's not a shot at the Rangers. Okay, it's just the reality of it. You got Adam Fox back there. You got Tony DeAngelo. These are inexperienced guys. These are high quality players. These are inexperienced guys. I think Kreider makes a big impact offensively, Pete. I think that's actually the Rangers player that you really want to zero in on in DFS nightly to get that exposure in the top six and first power play. But when it comes down to winning a postseason series, it's got to be Carolina. If you're putting money on this, it's Carolina. And I'll say this, if you're putting money on who's going to win the second draft lottery, it could be the New York Rangers.
that would be something else. But yeah, I agree. I think that the more you think about it, like D'Angelo, Nick mentioned, Ryan Strome, one of the breakout players of the year for the Rangers. They had a bunch of them. I mean, it's one thing for Ryan Strome to be a 50-point player in the regular season, but can he stack up against Jordan Staal, a seasoned guy, Vinny Trocheck, another seasoned guy who brings the body and can certainly take Ryan Strome out of a game and out of a series?
I'd say another wild card, too, just to add as we finish up this topic, Capocacco, right? Highly slotted draft pick last year, had a quiet offensive season, has the frame. Maybe the time off has allowed him to get back in shape mentally, right? And you get into a setting like this where, no doubt, we know the game plan of Carolina. It's going to be scripted all over Panarin, all over Zibanejad, all over Kreider. Maybe that opens up space for a Kako, right? I think in terms of playoff pools, you always want to identify guys who are sort of sleepers and nobody's really thinking about. Happened a couple years back with guys like Brian Rust and Jake Gensel for Pittsburgh. So no doubt I would have a guy like Kako on my radar in a deep sort of draft where you can think about offense from that standpoint.
It'd be a nice redemption story too as well, heading in for next regular season fantasy draft. But let's stay in New York here. Let's tune it to the Islanders. Now, their biggest X factor, I'd probably argue, is Semyon Varlamov. And what's interesting about this goalie situation, if you remember, beginning of the season, that was a timeshare. It was, I'm going to start Grice one game, I'm going to start Varlamov the next. It's no longer a timeshare. Varlamov ended up starting the way majority of starts, which is very interesting, coming from the New York Islanders brand of hockey for the past two seasons now. So, Pete, I know you've got the pulse on the aisles. What do you make of Varlamov as a true number one in this postseason format?
Well, he was so much better when they had guys like Adam Pelich and Johnny Boychuk, and those guys are both expected to come back from some really serious injuries. It was the eye injury for Boychuk, and it was that bad Achilles injury. It looked like he would be done for the year, but now we're in the other half of the year, right? We're going to be in July or August, so there's a new window for Pelich to return. Now, you look at Varlamov, and he's been streaky throughout his career. He's had some great moments. Last year, he didn't even play in the playoffs. He got usurped by Grubauer, so with the Avalanche. So I have my questions about him. My bigger question is, like, what is the NHL going to do with these players coming over from Europe? Because from whatever it sounds like Sorokin, like, may not come to the NHL for another year if he's not eligible to play in these playoffs. So for me, like, that's my biggest question, because if he is in the mix, he might start over Varlamov. You never know.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a stretch to suggest that, but it sounds like Romanov too with the Montreal Canadiens. It makes sense why I wouldn't have these guys come over and play right away. I get why they want to, but I get why they don't want to. From the Islanders' perspective, you could talk all you want about defense and you assume they're going to get back up to snuff. Let's not forget, this team was not playing well. They were treading, if even, and sort of trending and missing the playoffs. They had lost seven in a row. Where is the offense coming from, right? Like, Jean-Gabriel Pageot had two goals, I believe, in seven games, and that was their big deadline pickup to sort of address their depth, which didn't work. Granted, it takes some time to get a player acclimated to a new market, so I got full faith in J.G. Pageot figuring it out. It's definitely a guy you want in the Stanley Cup playoffs, kills penalties, scores big-time goals, has done it before. But offensively, the series is intriguing in so many respects, because I think you look at Florida, one of the better offensive teams I would slate in the NHL, and the Islanders, one of the best defensive teams. So in this day and age of hockey, offense seems to be defense a bit more than it did in the past. So I still have my wonder, Bob, the Islanders, who's scoring goals outside of Barzal, maybe what, Anders Lee and Brock Nelson?
Well, I'll repeat what I've said from the beginning. Tough to back the Islanders with their lack of offense. And I just want to rewind real quick to what Pete said, because I just want to make sure I'm not imagining, you know, there's not ghosts in my apartment and I'm hearing what you said. Sorokin would come in and start for the New York Islanders during this qualifying round. Peter, that's a little wild.
Maybe it is. I mean, I think that, you know, he's maybe the best goalie in the world outside of the NHL, and he's like on the same level of all these other Russian guys that have come in. So I think with like the fresh training camp, like Barry Trotz is a smart man. Like, why would he wouldn't rule that out if it was there. And just to backtrack to last year, like, remember Vegas, they had Nikita Gusev last year. He didn't end up playing in the first round, but he was eligible to play. So based on that line of thinking, why wouldn't Sorokin be eligible to play? Again, sure. It's the league's decision. It's not my decision.
I think it's great for us to go around the horn on it and discuss, but I just don't think you can have a guy like Romanov. You said it, Nick. That's the best example of it. If you're the Habs, why are you putting a 19-year-old defenseman, never played a game in his life in the AHL, let alone the NHL? What are you doing?
He wants to burn his contract.
That's irresponsible.
He wants the money, right?
That's irresponsible. But for Sorokin, I'm going to take Pete's side on this one. Goalie is that one position that you can get away with doing something like that. It gets the team playing harder in front of you. And the one thing I have to say about Varlamov, this is like Felix Hernandez in the MLB. Great pitcher, never got any run support. That's what the goalie for the New York Islanders is always going to be signing up for. I'm getting tired of people talking about the lack of goal support. This is the playoffs. One goal game is going to win you the game. You score two goals, you're going to be in it until the third period. So New York Islanders can easily win that series.
So I ask you this, Rob. There's no crowd. The Islanders are a team that thrives off a crowd. How are they generating anything is my question.
Barry Trotz behind the bench, barking orders.
You're a believer
going
in
there in the second period. I've never been an Isles apologist. I'm getting but every day on Twitter, I'm getting tired, even during this long break.
New people.
Of people harping. It's like Nick, you're recruiting all these people just to be Islanders trolls. And honestly, I'm getting tired of it. This is a team that can make noise. This is a team that I'm telling you, if you're the Capitals, if you're the Penguins, whatever, you don't want to face this team in a 7-game series. That's the bottom line. It's just, there's something about that team. They can turn on another gear when they can. I know we're talking about Adam Pelich. Look, this is not going to be a fantasy storyline. Okay. We all know that here, but this is real hockey and they can win a real series.
Okay, well, we're discounting, I think, Florida a bit, right?
Yeah, they sold at the deadline, Nick.
Well, who knows what they're thinking truly there. But I you know, maybe it's wishful thinking, but I'm thinking Sergei Bobrovsky is going to have a better than a 900 save percentage in the playoffs. If he does, they win the series. That's all I'll say, right?
You would think so, yeah. And but I do think in terms of flaws in the roster, like the Islanders have a good second and third line center behind Barzal. Florida's second line center is a hole to me. I mean, after they traded Trocheck. So it's probably going to be Erik Haula if he's healthy. He hasn't been healthy more
contract
than he has
been. You're not a believer in the contract year Haula?
I am. The guy scored 29 goals with the Golden Knights in the second line role a couple years ago. And I love him when healthy. He was great for the Canes earlier in the year. But I just don't know if it's going to cut it here. So, that's my concern. But, Robbie, I know, like, Mike Hoffman doesn't need a second line center to be productive.
That's a perfect transition. I was just going to say, guys, the player, if Florida wins this series, it's not going to be Barkov. We know Barkov's going to show up every night, play 24 minutes, score a point per game. It's going to be Mike Hoffman that scores those power play goals. That power play, you watch him against any opponent in the league, any penalty kill in the league, that team can score from both sides. You got Keith Yandel back there, who's probably the best power play quarterback in the NHL, and then you got Mike Hoffman. Say whatever you want. He gets a bad rap around the league. This guy can flat out score goals.
Yeah, the former San Jose Shark, Mike Hoffman, for a cup of tea. I'm looking at those two contract year guys outside of Barkov and Huberto, of course. They're going to be Dadonov and Hoffman. Don't sleep on Owen Tippett either, right? I think he's going to be in the taxi squad there, whatever we want to call it, for guys in terms of, you know, who you can call up and call down on your roster. So I think you want to look at guys like that too. But the Panthers are a team I think a lot of people are sleeping on. I know they struggled late in the season to find their way. I think their first half was okay, but I think it all stems from the goaltending, right? Anybody who's played this sport or documented this sport the way we have for a long time realizes that you can live or die by a goaltender just by the reaction and what happens in there. Some stinkers go in, it just ruins the room. So I think they're hoping Bobrovsky can make a save, A, considering that contract, and B, considering who they have on that roster right now too.
If Bobrovsky does not play well, Dale Tallon, his head is going to fall off his shoulders. I mean, considering all the goaltending issues that team has had, he goes out, gets Bobrovsky. Bobrovsky has not played well at all this season. If he has a stinker in this qualifying round and is awful, oh my God, Dale Tallon, I feel bad for him because he's got to be beside himself.
There's no way that Bobrovsky's going to have under 900 save percentage. I think we can all agree on that.
Well, Panthers are going to win the series. Okay.
Okay, I don't know that I'm not ready to say that. Okay, I'm not ready to make that call on this program.
Fine.
But I do want to stay on the goalies here, and I wanted to ask you guys about David Rittich of the Calgary Flames. No one's talking about the Flames right now. They really sleepy team in the regular season. That's probably why. But they're doing a lot of cool stuff. They're doing those trick shot challenges for Chris Snow, the assistant GM there. And it seems, honestly, you guys, like, I don't know if I'm reading too far deep into this, but it really seems like a good team building thing, kind of rallying around that cause and maybe strengthening their overall chemistry. So maybe do we like the Flames a little bit more with David Rittich in net, Pete? What do you think?
Well, David Rittich, one thing I was thinking about with him, like last year when you look back to the playoffs, like Mike Smith was getting the starts over him. So you'd have to imagine Rittich has that extra chip on his shoulder if he does get the starts over Cam Talbot to prove himself. And this is like the script has completely flipped compared to last year when they won, the Pacific Division last year and then bowed out early in the first round. Here, nobody's given them a chance. The Jets are the better team on paper, but that doesn't necessarily always materialize. And hey, is Rittich capable of going toe-to-toe with Connor Hellebuck in a five-game series? Yes, I think so. Even though Hellebuck could win the Vezina, there's not that big of a gap between those two.
Yeah, I think Tobias Rieder is just going to go off in this series. No, I don't. I like Winnipeg a lot, and I don't think that team got enough credit for how truly good a season they had. And again, it stems from their goaltending, but just the pace they play with. I watched a lot of Calgary Flames hockey this year, and they always left me wanting more, especially that top line, right? I think people do forget. They see the sexiness and the appeal of Gaudreau and Monahan and Lindholm, but their best line was actually the backline line with Mangiapane and Matthew Tkachuk. Matthew Tkachuk, I think, was their best player thick and thin throughout this season. People do forget that, right? Because you think Gaudreau, you think Monahan. From the best of my knowledge, Monahan was dealing with another nagging injury again this year. That has given him some time to recover the last little while. But I all, you know, we'll laugh, but I think the X factor this series is actually the top line of the Calgary Flames. Can they find their form again, right? Because Calgary's been a team in limbo in terms of depth. They've never really had a team in the last couple of years where they can count on your third line, count on your fourth line to chip in with an offensive goal. And I think conversely, you look at Winnipeg and guys who can do it on that roster and how much firepower they have, you know, line one through four, you know, you're going to get that pace, you know, you're going to get that skill and that speed. And I just don't know if Calgary can match up with them from an offensive standpoint, which is crazy to say because Calgary, I think, has been a mainstay in playoff conversation the last couple of years. But just in terms of looking at it on paper, I just don't like the matchup against Winnipeg for them.
And if you don't root for Mangiapane, then you don't know what you're doing because what a name, what a player. Mangiapane.
You know what that means, right?
Say it again, Nicholas.
Mangiapane. You know what it means, though, right? Bread eater.
Is that right?
Yeah, eat bread. Manja means eat, and bread or pane means bread.
Very nice. Thank you for the Italian course there.
And Giordano on the back end, too. You got to love the Flames. But all seriousness, top five team and road record, Calgary Flames. So if you're going to put your money on those series looking at road records, you got to go with the Flames. Otherwise, I agree wholeheartedly with Pete. Jets are better on paper. They got a Vezda goalie back there. Now, I just have to say, I have to concede, though, you guys. I was on the Jets last year in the postseason, too, and they just couldn't fire on all cylinders. And that was with a fully loaded back end. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that this year with a shell of what they had last year. And I'll say this about the Flames too, Nick, to your point, they always left you wanting more. Me too. Every time I stayed up for a Flames game, I was disappointed, even if they won the game. Always. There was always missed chances from that team. Their rush offense was lacking. Their defense was lacking this year. They could never put it all together. So this series to me is probably the biggest toss-up of the opening round. Now, whichever team wins, I think great. We can get back in on that team in the actual playoffs. But right now, I think this is, for me, a just sit back and watch what really happens here.
It's amazing to see, like, we were talking about all these players, like Sean Monahan, like, when is he going to take that next step in his career?
In Buffalo, like, next year, maybe. I think this is a big playoffs for Calgary and Dallas, more specifically Calgary. I think if they don't do anything substantial, I think one of those big boys is going.
The problem is they're not investing in the goaltending position. You cannot get away with these subpar contracts for these subpar net miners. It's just not going to win you a series. And let's not talk about the seventh round draft pick that everyone's hyping up. Seventh rounder, come on, this guy might never play a game in the NHL. So Calgary, it's got to be this year or they need some serious changes.
How about Taylor Hall? What?
Okay, yeah, well, Taylor Hall, the only thing to talk about there is that Arizona could be winning the draft lottery, which means that Taylor Hall's record for getting number one picks for that team lives on.
That's true. I don't know. I expect the unexpected in this NHL world. I just think, especially where Brad Treliving is in his time with Calgary, I think he needs a big move if Calgary can't do anything. So that's certainly one of the offseason storylines we'll be following, guys.
Since we mentioned the Coyotes, let's shift it to the Coyotes and the Predators because two really interesting X factors and then another one I wanted to mention. But, Robbie, you had Philip Forsberg and Connor Garland. Garland's expected to come back from the injury, and Forsberg's done it as well as anybody really in recent memory in terms of goals in the playoffs, right?
Connor Garland is the X factor. It's crazy that we're not looking at Phil Kessel. We're not looking at Clayton Keller. We're not looking on their back end at OEL. I mean, that says everything you need to know about the Coyotes. Now, with that said, that could be a good thing. It could be a good thing that these under-the-radar guys start to chip in offensively, the lesser-known guys, harder to match up against. And don't forget, I mean, they got guys in Christian Dvorak, too, that can produce at a pretty big clip if they get hot. So I do like the sneaky appeal of the Coyotes, but, Pete, I think the best stat here is that Philip Forsberg is tied with Tyler Johnson for 8th in postseason goals since 2014-15. This guy's a clutch scorer. I think they can make a deep run as long as they get through the Coyotes matchup.
I agree. I think from a Nashville perspective, we've talked about this before, guys, in the last couple months. Will their centers come to play, right? Because I think in this NHL world, everything runs up the middle. It's been that way for, you know, since the invention of hockey. And quite frankly, I watched a lot of Predators games this year. Matt Duchene, that's a lot of money. Ryan Johansson, that's a lot of money. Kyle Turris, that's a lot of money. If somehow this time off can get the fire burning again for these three guys, even two thirds of them. I think Nashville is one scary team because going into this season, I had them pegged as sort of a sleeper dark horse team that nobody's talking about, that on paper, Roman Josi potentially to win the Norris this season. Take your pick with Usaros or Pekarina. I think it's going to be Usaros at least to start. On paper, they have a really, really good roster, but I think from an offensive standpoint, a lot to be desired. Now, John Hines is a more of a defensive coach, but I think he's got to give these guys, you know, in the keys to the car and let them run with it. And I think it starts with Matt Duchene. If they can get that middle figured out, they're going to be a tough team to match, not only defensively, because I think they're pretty good defensively, but offensively as well. So that's my big storyline going into this series for Nashville for sure.
That's the tough thing, though. They're paying Turris so much money to be a third liner, so they play him on the second line and they play Duchene on the wing, which I don't like. I've been saying that from the beginning, and I think that works against them. I think if the top two centers are Johansson, who's been so up and down drastically, and Turris, I actually think that Dvorak, like Rob was pumping up, and even Nick Schmaltz, like those guys can match up well with those two and neutralize that advantage. If it's Duchene and Johansson up the middle, I love that for Nashville. I think they win the series, but there's no given. That's a question. Who's going to play in net? I think it should be Saros, but it's a question. There's too many questions for me with Nashville.
That's exactly it. I mean, the fact that people are even asking me on Twitter who's going to be the Nashville starter, I mean, that's a question that should not have to be asked when you've got a track record like Pekarinen's back there. So that's a big, big red siren. Now, the thing I have to say, though, I am going to defend Ryan Johansson. I am going to defend Matt Duchene. These guys can produce in the postseason, especially Rijo. He is really good postseason numbers-wise. Until he lets me down this year in the postseason when games matter more, I'm going to defend them.
All right. Well, I was disgusted by both those guys in fantasy hockey, and I'm always a recency guy. So.
You shouldn't be drafting Nashville forwards in fantasy.
Well, they're like depth streams. No, I was winning a lot of my – they're depth streams. You got to pick these guys up because you think of the appeal of their name, and then you get them on your roster, and they're like – but I think – you know, I think it's more of a systematic thing too. It's so easy to pinpoint players and say, this guy's a scrub, this guy's a scrub. But I think from – you know, Arizona's a perfect example, guys. They play a defensive system. If you're going to acquire guys who love to freewheel and fly, like Taylor Hall and Phil Kessel, you have to adapt. And that's why I think Arizona never found their identity throughout this season, right? You need to adapt to the personnel you have on your roster. And I think you have to see some buy-in too, right? Because Nashville was a team that under Peter Laviolette was known more for their offense. You bring in John Hines, who's a better defensive coach. You got to find that medium, right? And I think it's a struggle when teams change coaches like that.
That's a fantastic point, Nick. And I'll ask Pete, if Taylor Hall and Phil Kessel do find their groove and do start scoring like they have throughout their careers, what's the potential there for Arizona?
I think it's similar to what we're talking about Nashville. I think Arizona, with the way Kemper has played over the past two seasons, he's up there with any goalie in the league. I mean, his save percentage is even better than Robin Leonard's over the past 2 years, and we all know how good he's been with multiple teams. But he's kind of been the rock of the Coyotes. It's not just Hall and Kessel to me. Like, to me, Clayton Keller, like a couple years ago, as a rookie, was a 65-point producer for the Arizona Coyotes. Where has he been since then? I'm not exactly sure what's not really working over there in the desert with him, but he's my X factor because he can take the Coyotes to a whole different dimension, I think, if he gets that type of production going again. And I do think against Nashville, especially if they start Pekarinen, he can get those offensive numbers boosted again.
Last question here I'll throw out to you guys. Mm-hmm. I got to talk about Kevin Fiala. If we're talking X factors, that was the fantasy X factor regular season. You're probably looking at Brian Rust. You're looking at Chris Kreider. You mentioned earlier, Pete, and you're looking at Kevin Fiala. What do you think, Nick, for the postseason here?
Before we get to Nicholas, just a shameless promo, because apparently I don't do enough of it. You know, I got Dan Rose and Sean Rourke always barking at me. Why don't you bring up our program? Blah, blah, blah. So here you go. This is for Dan and Sean, who do a tremendous job. Despite the fact I mention them all the time on this show, and Pete and Rob probably are ready to throw up every time I mention them, but I'm doing it for Dan and Sean so I don't have to hear from them. Kevin Fiala, a guest on last week's NHL at the Rink from Sweden. He ringed in from Sweden, And it only took him about 45 minutes, you know, to figure out how to dial up the number. But he eventually got through, and Dan and Sean spoke to him. And it was a good interview. So do it for Dan and Sean. Listen, click play. I don't care if you listen. Just click play.
I thought he
drive
was from
up the numbers.
Yeah, he
was in Sweden, though. He was in Gothenburg. He is a Swiss.
Wow, cool,
he is a Swiss player, but he was in Gothenburg. And he was there with a bunch of other NHL players that he was that he was skating with during the pause. Anyway, that's the plug for Dan and Sean, sponsored by NHL at the Rink. Give it a listen, or again, just click play, drive up the numbers. Nick, fire away.
Yeah, Switzerland's a phenomenal place. You got to try their chocolate fondue. It's top. Yeah, Minnesota's a team that's intrigued me from the beginning of this thing, right? There's a lot of pride on that roster. I don't know if pride's going to win out in the playoffs, but it's their last kick of the can, right? Eric Staal, Ryan Suter, Devin Dubnyk. I do think they should go with Stalock in there. He had a nice finish to the season. Never say never, right? Vancouver's another one of those teams. They're probably the New York Rangers of the Western Conference. And more so, everybody's just crazy going nuts about them right now because of the personnel on that roster and because of what they did at spurts this season. Jacob Markstrom's going to be intriguing to watch coming back from injury, pretty bad injury at that. You know, Quinn Hughes had an excellent year, but don't sleep on Minnesota. It's, you know, just from a fantasy standpoint, guys, it was finally great to see Kevin Fiala live up to potential, right? He's always that guy I would pluck with my last round pick and say, hey, this is going to be the year Kevin Fiala finds his way. And well, naturally in the second half of this season, more times than not, most people took him off waivers, and next thing you know, he was ripping it up, and he's the centerpiece probably of the Minnesota offense now, Rob.
And don't forget Zach Parise, too. I mean, that's a guy that it's not going to surprise anybody if he's a point per game in the postseason. So I do think this Minnesota Wild team is sneaky. I like Vancouver's upside a whole lot more, but that doesn't always translate to an early postseason win when these guys are rookie or in their first, second season in the NHL.
Yeah, all those young guys on Vancouver, Besser has never played in the playoffs, Pettersson never has, Quinn Hughes never has. I mean, it's something to think about when you think about how many times Parise has been in the playoffs with the Devils and the Wild, how many times Suter's been in the playoffs with the Predators and the Wild, how many times, you know, Eric Staal has been in the playoffs with the Hurricanes and the Wild. So I think that veteran leadership is like a huge X factor for me because like Robbie said, like on paper, it should be the Canucks all the way. But really, like the Wild offense was not that much further back. They were 12th, and the Canucks, I think, were 8th in
That's
the league
crazy.
In scoring, which is ridiculous. I mean, the Wild don't even really have a good second line. So how is that happening? It's because of Fiala. It's because of those top guys, Fiala, Parise, and company.
It's an interesting series, right? Because you look at Minnesota, Billy Guerin's, you know, made it pretty profound that he wants to retool and rebuild. But I just love that. I just love that story of a team with Billy. There's no, you know, you're going to keep doing that. So I can't hear.
He's going to plug the episode from earlier in the season, right? Of Bill Guerin on executive suite.
No, I'm just going to finish up with saying that there's no pressure on Minnesota. There seems to be pressure on Vancouver, so don't overthink that either, right?
You know how I know this is going to be take the over every night in this series? You know how I know that already?
Oh.
Okay. Top five teams in goals against per game on the road. This is horrible. Minnesota and Vancouver are tied for fourth. 3.50 goals against on the road. You want to know who's worse than them? Detroit Red Wings, wild guess, above four goals against on the road. No surprise. Ottawa Senators, same thing, 3.71. The only team worse than those two that is in the postseason format, the Philadelphia Flyers.
Wow.
Okay, so look at the over-unders now and understand that Minnesota, not that much of a low-scoring team anymore, like Pete mentioned. Vancouver, they can score with the best of them. That's an over every night in that series.
That's a great nugget. And I'm just interested to see how Vegas, this is going to the over-unders. Like, how are they going to set the lines? How do they account for no fans? How do they account for the layoff? I mean, we saw a lot of sixes, six and a halves. It was rare you saw a 5.5 during the regular season. I just think there's some opportunity, as I've always said here, early in these qualifying round games, because Vegas does not have their finger on the pulse of really what to expect. So when Robbie throws out a stat like that, that's something that you should jump on, because Vancouver, Minnesota might be set at 5.5 goal total wise, you know, for the first couple games, and you can take advantage of that opportunity.
Yeah, I think I'm going to rip the over quite frequently at the beginning. Let's not forget, there's been a lot of time off, and every season, it seems like the first month of every NHL regular season, the overs are hit and hit and hit and hit. And to suggest that teams are going to come back, maybe play, two exhibition games and be this stifling defensive squad, I have my reservations. I have my wonders. That's why I truly wonder if a team like the New York Islanders can find it from a defensive standpoint really, really quickly. Shout out Rob Reese. But that's why I'm hoping for a lot of goals. I'll say that. That's more fun to watch, in my opinion.
And another thing to add to that, like, I was listening to a call with Devan Dubnyk the other day from the Wild, and he was not their starter, but he has some bounce back appeal here. But he said that he put on his goalie pads for the first time in 3 months the other day. So that was when he went to the practice facility and did, you know, the six-man group type of thing. But if he's going to be starting in game one, take the over for sure. No knock on him. It's just that's what these goalies are dealing with here. Their first real action is going to be maybe, game one.
The one situation where you would definitely take the over is under Pete's scenario, where Sorokin, who hasn't played in an NHL game, somehow gets between the pipes. Take the over there also.
And last thing I just want to say here, I'm going to tease this now, but I do have my Stanley Cup picked out. It came to me in a vision this morning, you guys, before the show. I'm going to announce that on either the next program or the following. So make sure it all came clear to me this morning. I know who's going to win. Okay. And secondly, this conspiracy theory stuff that I was talking about on the beginning of the show, that could be. Okay. So let's not write any of these theories off, because this is a crazy scenario for the NHL this year.
Can't wait till Rob picks placeholder to win the Stanley Cup.
TBD. We'll have to do another show for sure, though, and like go through all the inner workings of why we think, just because we have so much free time to talk about this stuff, we're going to have to document what needs to happen, what's going to happen for each of our sides to go all the way and meet in the cup final, because there are going to be some wild things happening if and when this thing gets going.
Yep, guys, I just want to say once again, thanks so much for having me. There's nothing more I would love to do on a Monday morning than talk hockey with you guys. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you for joining us. Unfortunately, because of the July 4th holiday here in the States, not sure if that check is going to get to you in time for the weekend.
Waiting for the last date, don't worry.
But thanks again.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Nick. This is like summer week. We got July 4th coming up later in the week, so appreciate you joining us in the middle of the summer, given the circumstances. So again, for Nick Alberga, follow him on Twitter at The Golden Muzzy. He does a great job for Sportsnet. Bobby B at Airchecked. NHL Reese, Rob Reese, follow him for sure for his behind the numbers articles and fantasy talk. And then myself, Pete Jensen. Thanks for listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice, and we'll talk to you on the other side.